All right.
Radio.
I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Today's date is March 17th, 2011. Planet Earth, third planet from the sun. And hey, I gotta tell you what. We got a lot to talk about today, tonight. Not just Obama this time, but so much more. Welcome to the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Show. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. The toll-free number, if you're cheap, is 877-666. Oh, yeah, 9305. Let's talk about it. First things first, Barack Obama is my pet peeve because he's such a tool, and he's possibly the worst president in the history of the United States of America, which is no mean feat. But right now I want to talk about something else, not just our awful, lazy-ass, shiftless president who has given black folks a bad name everywhere. I want to talk about the economy and where we're headed. You know, in my home, I have to account for everything I spend. All the money that I spend, I have to account for. When I go to prepare my budget, I have to be sure that I am taking in more money that I'm spending, saving more money than I'm spending, etc. Why doesn't our federal government operate that way? I believe that there should be a constitutional amendment. If there is a priority for constitutional amendments, the amendment to that demands that the United States government balance its budget each and every year should be included in that. And here's what I don't, you know, Americans, we go about our busy lives every day, and a lot of us have a lot going on. And I understand that. We have our friends, we have our families, we have our jobs. Some don't have jobs, but there's a lot of stress in life, and there's a lot going on. And the last thing we want to really worry about is how our federal government, things that are going on, you know, whether or not we're going to survive, you know, that whether or not the United States will survive. To some, it's inconceivable that we wouldn't. It's inconceivable that the United States, as the richest country on the face of the earth, would be insolvent. And I have had a hard time believing it myself. until I was faced with the facts and the figures that suggest that we are in dire financial straits, headed for the cliff and about to go off. We have Americans, patriots, people who love this great country, telling us that we need to change our ways. We need to do things differently. But nobody's listening.
The following is a fictional story of events that may happen in the near future. 8 a.m., New York Stock Exchange. It's a cold, breezy day on Wall Street, as markets await the Federal Reserve's announcement for QE4. Futures are up significantly. The Dow Jones just breached its 2008 high of 14,164. Gold just hit an all-time high of 2,900. Silver just breached $100 per ounce. The dollar index is holding at 53. With official unemployment at 16.3%, there's a nervous feeling on Wall Street that if this doesn't work, the world could implode into a depression that will last for the remainder of the decade. 8:19 a.m., Beijing. Chinese officials announced that they can no longer allow Washington to devalue their holdings. After making their concerns private, China accepts that Washington will never stop paying its debts with inflated currency. China makes an official statement from Beijing, quote, "We have made our concerns known privately for some time. With QE4 about to be announced today, China will have no choice but to stop purchasing U.S. treasuries. We have allowed Washington to try to work through their imbalances for 4 years. But with global inflation and U.S. consumers rapidly shrinking as a percentage of global GDP, we feel that a Western recovery is unlikely until they reform their entitlement programs." 8:45 a.m., New York Stock Exchange. Upon hearing the statement from China, Dow futures have a sharp reversal and begin to drop. Gold leaps past $3,000 per ounce, up $150 per ounce in the last 26 minutes. CNBC awaits a statement from the White House. 8:50 a.m., Washington, D.C. The president makes an official statement to calm investors' fears. He tells Americans that he has spoken with several G20 leaders. They have assured him that they will continue to increase their purchase of treasuries and believe that a strong U.S. economy is the only thing that will bring back global prosperity. He has also spoken to Chairman Bernanke, who assures him that a strong dollar will be the result of QE4. The president also reminds Americans that his recent New Deal recovery programs that he passed through executive order will increase the likelihood of a lasting recovery. He also notes that Beijing, since 2009, has slowly been reducing their holdings, so the impact will be minimal. 9:51 a.m., New York. Dow futures fall 850 points in the first 20 minutes of trading. Markets are halted for 1 hour by the authorities. 10 a.m., Main Street, America. The news about the stock market in China has now spread. A panic begins to set in, and unprepared Americans rush to the grocery store. In an attempt to purchase food and water, Americans that didn't know what was going on are alerted by all of the news stories and panic buying. Within 50 minutes, there is a nationwide rush to the stores. Empty store shelves in America become a reality. 10:52 a.m., New York. Markets reopen and the Dow Jones resumes its collapse. Investors around the world join the sell-off in bonds and stocks and begin to purchase commodities. Unlike the panic of 2008, this time commodities are seen as the only safe haven from a dollar crisis. 11:30 a.m., New York. The Dow falls 1,700 points since reopening. Trading is halted for at least 2 hours. The Federal Reserve injects $200 billion into the markets and announces that QE4 will be delayed until further notice. Congress is called back to D.C. for an emergency joint session. Some members of Congress are saying that they consider China's statement a financial attack. 12 p.m., Main Street, America. Several cities begin to see civil unrest after grocery stores are forced to close. Traffic in the streets and violence break out. The president puts the National Guard on alert for a possible deployment onto U.S. streets if things don't get under control soon. Several news agencies are reporting injuries at grocery chains and call for the authorities to do something before it gets worse. 12:15 p.m., Toronto, Canada. George Soros tells CNBC that a run on treasuries is imminent and that there is nothing the government can do to stop it. He says it is unfortunate that a controlled decline of the dollar was not coordinated better over the years. Today really could have been avoided if not for the Tea Party politicians who demanded fiscal responsibility and a constitutional government. 3 p.m. Gold closes at $11.53 for the day at $4,053 per ounce. Silver closes at $173 per ounce. The president announces that due to civil unrest in some areas of the country, U.S. stock markets will remain closed for the rest of the day. With the exception of mining and other inflation-related stocks, the majority of U.S. stocks are down significantly due to the sell-off and flight to safety in commodities. The Federal Reserve announces that it will begin to purchase U.S. treasuries and stocks in order to stabilize the market. But this only feeds investors' fears of a full-blown treasury run and collapse of the dollar. 6 p.m., Asia. Asian markets begin a massive sell-off. Dollar collapse rumors begin to take hold of the market. CNBC Asia looks into a possible COMEX default and complete breakdown in the U.S. economy. Gold spikes in Asia, up $17.50 in the first complete hour of trading. Gold is now at $58.03. 7 p.m., gold and silver bullion dealers across the world have suspended all sales due to no inventory. A COMEX default is now expected. Several central bank representatives propose a freeze on currency markets and a fixed devaluation of the U.S. dollar in order to calm investors. 7:30 p.m., the United States. The sun sets on America. In the last 12 hours, the world has changed. Americans are glued to their televisions, taking a crash course on a debauched currency. Smoke from fires in the cities have put a dark cloud over the nation. 7:45, the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve announces it will inject $1.5 trillion into the markets in order to stop any further decline in stocks. 7:55 p.m., OPEC. The final nail in the coffin. OPEC nations halt oil trades in U.S. dollars until further notice. They will only accept euros, renminbi, or gold. 7:59 p.m., the Federal Reserve's announcement to inject $1.5 trillion into the markets causes a sharp reversal in overseas markets. Stocks begin to rally even as Main Street melts down. 8 p.m., Manhattan. Gerard Adams, president of the National Inflation Association, sends out an urgent email alert. In it, he informs members that it is with great sadness that the time to warn and prepare Americans for hyperinflation has ended.
Think this can't happen? If you think that what was just described can't happen, then you're really not paying attention. You're really not. Because what's going on every single day is a clear barometer of where we're headed in America. It's a sign that the end of America is very much near. And we have folks who in Congress and the Senate and government everywhere who's consistently telling us that nothing's wrong, that everything's going to be fine. America's not broke. To the contrary, we have everything we need. All is well. America's going to be just fine. All we need to do is tax those evil rich people. So if we tax those evil rich people, that'll solve all our problems. I remember I remember many years ago in the 1980s and early 1990s. Yeah, that was many years ago. When I started investing on my own for the first time. And back then, I often read arguments by various gold bugs and libertarian-leaning economists about how the U.S. dollar was on a path to total destruction. Even then, I was often reminded that all fiat currencies met the same fate, and that the dollar would be no different. Fast forward a few years to 1997 when I started communicating that same message for a living. Though I remained more concerned with other things, I kept revisiting this message. I kept thinking that the Fed's actions would have dire financial consequences for us all. But for about 10 years, nothing apocalyptic happened. Every time I looked like, or every time it appeared, it looked like the end was finally coming. The night and day of economics, political and financial reckoning, when it just appeared that it was upon us, the Fed would spring to action and ease. The market would rebound, and away we went on another bullish sprint. But at long last, it seems as though we finally arrived at the point of no return. Anyone who lends the U.S. government a penny at this point is simply suicidal, or they don't mind throwing their money away. And you don't have to guess about this. Listen to the market. The market is trying to tell you something very important. More than once I said late 2008 was the blow off the top of a multi-decade bull market in treasury bonds. And that's all correct. As interest rates continue to make higher and higher and higher lows, the treasury bond prices move opposite to interest rates. Can you follow that? So they're making lower highs, and soon I expect even lower lows. 30-year treasury bonds were yielding as little as 3% in 2008. Today they're yielding 4.5%, an enormous move, although it doesn't seem so. If interest rates double in the next 2 years, it won't surprise me a bit. Finally, after years of believing the collapse of the U.S. dollar, though inevitable, was apparently far in the future, it's here. It's here. The crisis so many people have thought and written about for so many years has finally arrived on our doorstep. It's no longer appropriate to say we're worried about the world our children and grandchildren will inherit. We need to be worried right now about ourselves. Like any good demon, the destruction of the U.S. dollar has arrived with a smile on its face in the form of an exuberant stock market. The S&P 500 has rallied 75% since early 2009. Now, on its face, that would seem to be a good thing. Focused, as usual, on the rear view mirror, investors are way too bullish according to every stock market sentiment indicator that I've seen. American Association of Individual Investors, a sentiment survey, the Investors Intelligence Survey of newsletters, Ned Davis researches Crown Sentiment Poll stocks, and they're projected to rise to the moon. Now, gold, the anti-dollar, has been telling us for 10 straight years that the crisis is coming. Gold was around $252 an ounce in the summer of 1999. It's now around $1,350, and I am both smiling and crying at the same time, because not only did I own gold, and do I own gold, and did I purchase, I have purchased gold at $200 an ounce, $250. When it went up to $250, I was very happy, because at that time, the economy was doing well. I still own that same gold, and it is quadrupled in value. Gold is up 5-fold against the U.S. dollar. And that's not a great statement of confidence in the world's reserve currency. It's important that we continue to pay attention to it. It's something you should notice. You, the guy who works at Walmart, the guy who works at the gas station, whether you are packing boxes or whether you're working at a six-figure job, you should be paying attention to all of this. It's important. Buy gold. Hold it. Caress it. Love it. Hide it. But do not sell it. Buy, buy, buy. There's a reason why Democrats in Congress wanted to hold hearings when they were in power related to the purchase of gold. They wanted to discourage us, Americans, both big and small, from buying gold, because they know that with gold prices rising, the dollar is weakening, not as a result of buying gold. The dollar does not become weaker because we go out and purchase gold. The gold becomes more valuable because the world economy senses that the dollar is being. The movie Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, where all that needs to happen is a rumor. Put a rumor out that has even just a bit of truth into it. Now, in the case of the movie, there was a lot of truth to the gossip that was put out that destroyed the financier in the movie. But if you put it out there, you don't have to have any proof. That's my point. Just put the financial rumor out there. And all it takes is for one major financier to bite on that rumor. And everything collapses like dominoes. And that's what we see happening right now. The dollar is losing its value, and people sense it, and they're buying gold. That's the situation. That's where we find ourselves right now. We're at a time when America is under deep financial stress and collapsing, financially and otherwise. And Obama, our president, he doesn't seem to care all that much. Or maybe it's all part of his plan. In 2 short years, Barack Obama has wrestled the crown, for the most self-indulgent president. He's taken that crown. He's wrestled Bill Clinton down to the ground to take the most self-indulgent crown away from Bill Clinton. It's all about him. Now, Clinton's most indulgent moment came when he urged Lewinsky to perform oral sex on him while he took a phone call from a congressman. Kinky, in the Oval Office. I don't really care about it. I didn't. The only thing I cared about was him lying about it. Because I believe he lied to me personally, but that's neither here nor there. The November 17th, 1995 incident occurred in private. The congressman did not suspect anything was amiss, and it was not revealed until years later as part of the Ken Starr investigation. So, not that big of a deal. Obama's most self-indulgent moment was broadcast on national television this week when, in the midst of numerous crises, crying out for American leadership, he took time to film his picks for the NCAA basketball tournament brackets for broadcast by the ESPN network. This follows a 2-year string of self-indulgences by Obama since he became president that has demonstrated to the world that nothing comes before Obama me time. Now, most famously, Obama did not interrupt his 2009 luxury Christmas vacation in Hawaii when an Islamist terrorist tried to blow a passenger jet out of the sky over Detroit on Christmas Day. Obama could barely be moved to speak to the nation about the attack, which came within a failed detonator of succeeding. And now, with the Middle East in flames and America's closest Asian ally teetering on collapse from a triple whammy of a 9-point earthquake, subsequent apocalyptic tsunami, and multiple nuclear power plant failures, Obama has spent time golfing, partying with the press, fundraising, hanging out with athletes, prepping for his NCAA bracket presentation, and getting ready for the Obama taxpayer-funded spring break trip to Rio de Janeiro this weekend. Ballsy? Yeah, I think I'd say so. The guy is either arrogant or stupid. One or the other. The White House website proudly displays Obama's picks for the men's and women's tournaments. You, me, the U.S. taxpayer, paid for the posting and hosting of Obama's picks. When is it going to stop? How insulting. Here's what he had to say. One of the things I wanted to do on the show was, as people are filling out their brackets, this is obviously a national pastime. We all have a great time. It's a great diversion. But I know a lot of people are thinking, how can they help the Japanese people during this time of need? If you go to usaid.gov, that will list all the nonprofits, the charities that are helping out there. It would be wonderful for people to maybe offer a little help to the Japanese people at this time as they're filling out their brackets. It's not going to take a lot of time. That's usaid.gov. It could be really helpful. This is the President of the United States, you all. How insulting. But that's Obama. At least he didn't say, as you're filling out your brackets, say a quick prayer for the Libyans I betrayed by spending more time working on my brackets than on figuring out a way to depose Gaddafi without getting him replaced by radical Islamists. At least he didn't say that. As you're filling out your brackets, try not to think about the skyrocketing prices of gasoline and food. Let's party March Madness style. Even the lapdog White House press corps has complained about the difficulty of providing cover for Obama on his creepy bracket presentation. Question. Is it entirely appropriate for the president to be addressing a crisis of this gravity as he's standing before a whiteboard talking about a basketball tournament? Mr. Carney, White House spokesman, responds, "There are crises all the time and for every president. And again, this one is happening halfway around the world. And it is severe and it is important. And it is the focus of a great deal of the president's attention, as are the events in the Middle East, as are the agenda items that he is pursuing to grow the economy and increase jobs in America. Make sure we out-innovate, out-build, out-educate the competition in the 21st century. It's a hard job that requires a lot." My goodness. He goes on to say, it's also important, one of the things I would note that the president did in that very brief interview on ESPN and ESPN2 was ask Americans, as they're filling out their own brackets, filling out their brackets? Take time and go to usaid.gov and make donations to a variety of charitable organizations that are organizing donations to help the Japanese in this very serious situation that they find themselves in. And so, yes, I do think it's appropriate. Okay, picture it. The world is burning down to the ground. Crisis everywhere. Prices going up. Food prices, gas prices. Libyans who oppose Gaddafi are being slaughtered. Brings to mind the Bay of Pigs, doesn't it? All of this is going on. Americans are unemployed. We're teetering on the brink of insolvency as a nation, financially. And the president is golfing and filling out his brackets for ESPN. And he has a whiteboard behind him as he gives a briefing, talking about, hey, while you're filling out your brackets, go ahead and stop over at usaid.gov and blow a little of your hard-earned cash and send it over to the Japanese who so sorely need it. I make no bones about that. But while you're filling out your brackets, isn't that kind of like, well, maybe you're married, or maybe you have a girlfriend, a sweetheart, and it's her birthday. And instead of paying her some attention all day during that very special day, you're off at a football game. And, oh, you give her a call while you're at the game and say, hey, honey, happy birthday. I'm taking time out of my busy football game watching to wish you a happy birthday. Or perhaps you're supposed to be at work doing your job. And you leave, you don't go to work. You head right on over to the movies. You've got that important presentation coming up, and you've got to prepare for it. You've got folks coming in from out of town. You got all this stuff happening. And yet you decide to blow it off and go to the movies. But you call in and say, hey, while I'm at the movies, could you turn my computer on for me and feed me a couple of numbers while I'm sitting here watching the movie? I could go on and on with this. The Obamas have told Americans they need to cut back on vacations, business travel, and spending to deal with the ongoing economic crisis. Yet, the Obamas themselves have shown no signs whatsoever of sacrificing anything. Michelle Obama wears clothes, shoes, and accessories that cost thousands of dollars and lives a jet-set lifestyle. Barack Obama has spent over 300 hours, the equivalent of 7.5 40-hour work weeks, playing 61 rounds of golf since becoming president 2 years ago. In just the past few weeks, Barack Obama has hosted parties at the White House for Motown and pro basketball, attending parties with the press, and has hosted several Democrat fundraisers in D.C. and around the country, all while allies and critics alike have complained about the lack of leadership by Obama on pressing national and foreign issues. Never mind all that, he says. Spring break is here. Surf's up in Rio. I swear to God, articles of impeachment should be drawn. Wake up, Mr. Obama. Do your damn job. This isn't funny anymore. I was laughing at first because he's putting his foot in his mouth. But it's not funny anymore. Do your job, dude. How hard can it be? How hard can it be to simply do your job? Dude, Obama, if you don't want to do this job, don't run for re-election. Don't waste everybody's time. It's too important. What is happening to America and what is happening around the world is too important. This is the time for serious men, serious leadership, a serious president. Playtime, amateur hour is over. It was wonderful. It was great. You gave us a few laughs. But you're wasting our time. Do your damn job, for Christ's sake. It's not funny anymore. You're a laughingstock around the world. You're the laziest damn president in the history of the United States of America. You seem to have no interest whatsoever in the job itself and what it really means. You're spending all our money partying like it's 1995. You have got to go. Damn it. President Barack Obama's laissez-faire approach to ongoing spending debates is winning him few friends on Capitol Hill. That too. He's not even engaged in what's going on here in America. He has not even weighed in on the budget debate. He shows no leadership whatsoever. It's all, hey, you guys work it out. I'm going to golfing. Or, hey, you guys work it out. How hard can it be? I'm going to Rio. The frustration with this guy is building on both sides of the aisle. Do your job. Somebody should pull this guy by the coattails and tell him to do his damn job. This arrogant, cocky, scrawny little punk who we have elected to the White House is destroying this country. This country's reputation. And it's amazing. This guy is a coward. Our president is a cowardly punk, a skinny little punk. He has no idea what the hell is going on. Now, moving right along, as Libyan opposition forces fight for their lives, Bay of Pigs style, President Obama negotiates at the United Nations. This is tragic, misguided, catastrophic, and all too late. There are no more excuses. The Obama administration has chosen to analyze and consult and dither and golf and hang out rather than lead. But is anyone surprised? This is what you paid for. This is the guy you elected. Opposition forces, once knocking on the door of Tripoli, are fighting for their lives after being pushed back to their remaining stronghold. It should have not come to this. After Tunisia in December and Egypt in January, the administration cannot say it was caught off guard by developments in Libya. A full month since brave revolutionaries stood up to challenge eccentric and loony dictator Muammar Gaddafi, and 2 weeks since President Obama declared that Gaddafi had lost legitimacy and must go, the Obama administration still has no defined objectives or plan of action. The administration hasn't even extended recognition to the opposition National Council, who at the moment is the only organized political alternative to Gaddafi. Even the French, the damn French, have taken this step. The French have been more aggressive and shown more leadership than the President of the United States of America. Is this not embarrassing to you? Do you not find this to be appalling? I do. Long ago, the administration should have extended diplomatic recognition to the opposition and taken real action to ensure its ability to survive. There were many missed options, short of an Iraqi-style invasion or even a no-fly zone. Here's the thing. Our cowardly, candy-ass, lazy-ass president has a history of not being able to decide. He has a history of not being able to decide what to do. He doesn't have the intestinal fortitude to put his name, his reputation, on the line. Because he's afraid that if things don't go his way, then somehow it'll have a problem. It'll be a problem with his reputation. He'll be like, oh, he doesn't want that. Think about the time he was in the Senate in Illinois. 63% of the time he voted present. In the Capitol here in D.C., he voted present the majority of the time he was there. He didn't want to be on either side of the argument. That should have been a clue to everyone. Now he's president of the United States, and he's pretty much voting present on everything, every major issue. He has voted present, and most of the time he hasn't even been present. Now, back to Libya. Communications capabilities could have been enhanced to ensure the opposition's ability to communicate internally and externally and internationally. I've been there. I know what I'm talking about. Everything, many things could have been done to aid this opposition covertly. Stuff we don't even need to know about. But it wasn't done. The fact that to date, most of the world has no idea who the opposition is of itself, a testament to the cost of avoiding this relatively inexpensive non-military action. Even a limited no-fly zone should have been established. If the U.S. and allies lack the will or military capability to impose a no-fly zone covering all of Libya, the U.S. should have at least encouraged others to step up and support a more limited no-fly zone. This would have helped ensure the opposition capital had reliable lifelines to survive, food, information, weapons, etc. Instead, what the Obama administration has done, well, they sent Secretary Clinton to the UN Human Rights Commission, took her forever to get there, passed the UN Security Council sanction that do nothing to help the opposition, and worse, passed the UN's arms embargo that the State Department spokesman interpreted incorrectly as making provisions of arms to the opposition a violation of international law. A bunch of clowns. The whole administration, from the top all the way down to the lowest man in the administration, are just a bunch of morons. They're all a bunch of nutless monkeys. From Barack Obama on down, he is an idiot. I tell you what, I'm starting to really dislike that guy. You know, and there was a time when he didn't, whether I liked or disliked him was immaterial. his policies were the issue for me. But now, more than his policies, I'm just starting to dislike him as a man, because I'm a man. I spent 30 years in the Marine Corps. And I know, I've been around men. This guy is not a man. Oh, yeah, in the physical sense. But he's not a man. You know what I'm talking about, a man. He's a punk. It's too late now. The opposition is being overrun. Too little, too late. Now, some argue that, well, Obama knows what he's doing. But no, he doesn't. And Hillary's fed up with him. Word's going around that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is fed up with the president and his refusal to grow a pair and establish a no-fly zone over Libya. He could do it easily. There's a carrier battle group in the area right now as we speak. Has been. Sources say that Hillary's trying to do what she can to keep things from imploding. A Clinton insider told the online newspaper, or an online newspaper, if you take a look at what's on her plate as compared to what's on the plates of previous secretaries of states, there's more going on now at this particular moment, and it's like playing sports with a bunch of amateurs, and she doesn't have any power. The tensions have even spilled over into her dealings with European diplomats, French President Nicolas Sarkozy, urged Clinton to press the White House for more aggressive action in Libya. Clinton replied, there are difficulties. Huh. One diplomat describes Obama's foreign policy shop as amateur night. But hey, who was it who warned us about all this in a commercial during the campaign? It seems that every fear that was put out there about this guy, our so-called president, has been found to be correct and true. And it's alarming. Wasn't it Hillary herself who said that, who do you want to pick up the phone at 3 a.m.? Me or this moron? This amateur, this nutless monkey president of ours. Who do you want? Well, so many Americans said, we want the nutless monkey. So now you've got the nutless monkey, President Barack Obama. And as a result of his not having any balls at all, how he managed to father two kids, I'll never know. Incidentally, causing the deaths of thousands of people in the Middle East by his non-action, just as President Kennedy was inadvertently responsible for the deaths of countless Cubans during the Bay of Pigs. President Obama is inadvertently responsible for the deaths of Libyans who are fighting for freedom in their country, who depend upon countries like the United States of America for backing and support. Ronald Reagan said that the United States of America was the last beacon of hope for the world. Not anymore. Not anymore. It's embarrassing. With this guy as president of the United States, America has been turned into one candy-ass nation. Our reputation as a global superpower is gone. This is a time. We live in times right now where we need serious leadership. We need a serious president. We need someone in office who... We need someone in office like Ronald Reagan. And we don't have Ronald Reagan anymore. And there is no Reagan-esque candidate out there. And that's why I don't sleep well at night because of it. Because I wonder where this great nation is headed. I don't want, you know, unlike many Americans, a lot of Americans, unlike most African Americans, most black folks, I love this great country. And I like it just the way it is. No country is perfect. No, there's no such thing. There never has been. And there never will be. This is my country, and I love this country. I deeply love this country and its people. And I hate to see this so-called president, this nutless, gutless monkey of a president, destroy this great country and our reputation all over the world. It's embarrassing. In 2012 cannot come fast enough. We need to start over. We need to start over. We need a new president. We need a Ronald Reagan. We need a president who takes his job seriously. We don't have that here. We don't have it right now. All right. Well, I'll be back tomorrow. I hope everyone has a wonderful night. God bless you, and God bless America.